Let's look at Exodus chapter 27 as we get back into the Word today. We are taking in all of the information that God provided to Moses on Mount Sinai during the first 40-day period Moses spent up there. And actually, because there was a seven-day waiting period at the beginning, it's actually a 33-day period that Moses and God are in conference with one another. The description that we have is what is needed to build the tabernacle. The tabernacle is a portable worship meeting area. The temple will eventually be the more permanent representation of what the tabernacle is for the Israeli people here starting at Mount Sinai. The items that are put into the tabernacle are very important, the most important of which was the Ark of the Covenant, because that is God's throne. Then we had the table of the bread of God's presence. That's all about fellowship and sustenance in relationship with God. And then the menorah, the lampstand, all about the light of God, His Word, on a seven-day-a-week period. We have not yet got to the incense altar, which is the only other item that's inside the actual tabernacle itself. Instead, we went out front now, and we're talking about the altar of sacrifice. So chapter 27, verse 1, "You shall make the altar of acacia wood," and we've seen the acacia wood being used for other items as the base for the actual structure itself, 5 cubits long and 5 cubits broad. And remember, I believe that they were using the long Egyptian cubit that's almost 20 inches, not quite. That would make this frame 8 feet, 7.5 inches on all four sides, because it's basically a board frame that has a hollow center. This is going to be the structure that is used for sacrificing the animals, burning up the meat. The altar shall be square. Its height shall be 3 cubits. So that's 5 feet, 2.1 inches. So that's a lot higher than when a person can reach up and effectively manipulate the things that are in the grate area halfway down the structure. So this is going to guarantee that there will be an earthen ramp up on probably three sides of this altar to allow the priests to use implements to move the meat and the wood around as the fire is burning. We'll talk a little bit about that later. You shall make horns for it on its four corners. Its horns shall be of one piece with it, and you shall overlay it with bronze. So the four big wooden, we'll call them boards, are going to be overlaid with a very durable metal, bronze. And on the four corners of this altar, there are going to be protrusions that will be reminiscent of animal horns. And if you want to think about animal horns as the design element here, think of either the ram's horn, which I doubt that's it, or the big bull horn, the oryx horn, the ox horn. And these horns represent power, strength, and they are very typically found on ancient Middle Eastern altars. Sometimes they're stylized, such as in a stone altar that I have in my head right now from another culture. It was just basically a little pyramidal shape at the corner of each of the stone sides of the altar. These horns for the Israeli altar will be the point of contact for the blood in certain ceremonies. And so when we hear about the horns of the altar, these are what we're talking about. Now, verse 3, you shall make pots for it to receive its ashes, because this is going to burn a lot of wood, produce a lot of ash. And so those ashes have to be scooped up and carted away from the altar so that the altar can continue to be used. Think about your fireplace if you have one. You know, after you've burned a little bit of logs, several days worth perhaps, you have to get in there and scoop up all of that ash and put it in a little ash pod and take it away. Otherwise, you won't be able to use your fireplace. That's what's going to have to happen with this altar. You shall make pots for it to receive its ashes, and shovels, and basins, and forks, and fire pans. The forks are going to be used to move the meat around, perhaps even to move some of the logs, some of the wood around on the grate. The fire pans are going to be important because of the need to keep hot coals from the end of service one day until the beginning of service the next day. You shall make all its utensils of bronze. And as I said, bronze is a very durable metal, especially when you're using it outside with fire. Verse 4, you shall also make for it a grating, a network of bronze, and on the net you shall make four bronze rings at its four corners. And you shall set it under the ledge of the altar so that the net extends halfway down the altar. So the best way to think about this is a barbecue grill. You need some place to be able to set the charcoal on, right? Or in this case, you need some place to put the firewood on. And this has to be pretty strong. So don't think about this as a piddly little grate work. It's probably great big rods of bronze that have been interwoven with one another to make a pretty good heavy-duty grate work that will then be attached at its four corners halfway down the height of this three cubits. So it's going to be a cubit and a half down. And this will be the burning area. And as the wood burns and the meat burns, what's left eventually drops between the holes in the grate work and gets scooped up and removed by use of the shovels and the pots that we had mentioned earlier. So this is going to be a constant job to keep this thing burning up sacrifices. Verse number 6, because it needs to be portable, we have this. Verse 6, you shall make poles for the altar. Now, since this altar is the largest thing we've seen made so far, these poles must be really super long themselves, because the altar is 8 feet, 7.5 inches on each side. So you're going to make poles for the altar, poles of acacia wood, overlay them with bronze, and the poles shall be put through the rings so that the poles are on the two sides of the altar when it's carried. So we have to be able to move it from place to place with a whole bunch of transport persons. You shall make it hollow with boards. Now that sounds a little confusing. Think about the idea that the hollow is the open area between the four sides. That's what it means about it's hollow. And then halfway down in that hollow area will be placed the grate. You shall, as it has been shown to you on the mountain, so it shall be made. So the altar of sacrifice becomes the symbol of Jesus' death, because he is the ultimate final sacrifice. And so the altar represents that atonement idea of Jesus. Now we skip to the fencing, we're going to call it, around the worship area, the service area of the tabernacle. Everybody is going to be funneled through a front gate in order to worship God through the services offered at this tabernacle. So verse number 9, you shall make the court of the tabernacle. On the south side, the court shall have hangings of fine twisted linen, 100 cubits long for one side. So the south side and the north side are going to be the long sides. They are 100 cubits, and those are long Egyptian cubits. So we're talking 172 feet and 6 inches. So half plus a little extra of a football field in length. It's going to be a fabric fence. It's 20 pillars, and their 20 bases shall be of bronze, but the hooks of the pillars and their fillets shall be of silver. So each of these two sides, the south and the north side, are going to have 20 pillars or posts that the tent is stretched between. There's 20 sections to a side. That tells us that each of these fabric panels are going to be 5 long cubits in length. Later we'll find out that they're 5 long cubits in height as well. And so that's 8 feet, 7.5 inches. The pillars are going to have hooks in order to hold onto the fabric to keep it in place. And those are going to be specially made to be decorative as well as practical. Verse 11, likewise, for its length on the north side, there shall be, and then it gets repeated because the north side is exactly the same length. Verse 12, for the breadth of the court on the west side, which is what we're going to refer to as the back side of the tabernacle court, there shall be hangings for 50 cubits. So the east side and the west side are half the length of the north and the south side. So it's a perfect double square or a perfect rectangle. The 50 long cubits are going to be 86 feet, 3 inches in length. And it is made with 10 pillars and 10 bases. And once again, we end up with fabric panels that are 5 long cubits by 5 long cubits in 10 sections on the backside of the tabernacle courtyard. Now, the breadth of the court on the front to the east shall be 50 cubits, because it is a perfect double-squared rectangle. But on the east side, that's the entrance side. And so we're going to talk about how the entrance is designated and designed. Verse 14, the hangings for the one side of the gate shall be 15 cubits, with their three pillars and three bases. So again, we've got 5x5 fabric panels in three sections. So that's on one side of the entrance. The other side is going to be a mirror of that with 15 cubits, three pillars, three bases. So we're talking about 34.5 feet on the left side as you're facing it, and 34.5 feet on the right side as you're facing it. And then there is a 20-cubit gap in between the two. And so 20 cubits is 34.5 feet. And so that opening is the gate area that everybody's going to come to in order to do their worship. Now, it's not just simply a gap. It's not just simply open. Verse 16, for the gate of the court, there shall be a screen. It's going to be a fabric screen. It's going to be different than the other fabric panels. It shall be a screen 20 cubits long of blue and purple and scarlet yarns and of fine twisted linen, embroidered with needlework. It shall have four pillars and with them four bases. So it's four sections with special curtain, special fabric that really highlights that this is the entry point. All the pillars around the court shall be filleted with silver. Their hooks shall be of silver and their bases of bronze. And so this is the place on the east side that everybody will be drawn to for worship. Verse 18, the length of the court shall be 100 cubits, the breadth 50, and the height 5 cubits, with hangings of fine twisted linen, bases of bronze. Now, the height is of interest to me because it's higher than what you can look over. So if you want to see what's going on inside, you really need to come to the front gate. But it is half the height of the actual tabernacle building itself, which is 10 cubits tall. So that guarantees that no matter where you're at in the camp, you're going to be able to see the top half of the tabernacle building towering above the fabric fence around the courtyard. Verse number 19, all the utensils of the tabernacle for every use and all its pegs and all the pegs of the court shall be of bronze. Now, all those pillars that hold up the fabric fence are going to need little guy wires. It's going to be ropes to hold them up so that they can bear their load of the 5x5 cubit panels that form the fabric fence all the way around. So every tent peg, as we're going to call them, has to be made of bronze as well. Bronze is kind of our outdoor metal of choice. Silver will also be used outdoors, we can see too. And so everything used outside has to be pretty much of bronze and a little bit of it of silver. Verse number 20, we change our attention to what is needed to fuel the menorah inside the tabernacle. Verse 20, you shall command the people of Israel that they bring to you pure beaten olive oil for the light, that a lamp may regularly be set to burn. Now, when you go to the store, if you buy olive oil, you know there are different grades of olive oil. And so the most pure grade is the grade that's supposed to be used for lighting. It burns with lots less smoke. And so part of the donation for the tabernacle is going to be of the better grade, the best grade of olive oil for the menorah to burn. Verse 21, in the tent of meeting, outside the veil that is before the testimony. That's talking about the veil that separates the holy place, where the priests do daily work, from the most holy place, where God's ark, his throne, is located. So that special veil with keruvim, all embroidered on it. So the menorah is on the outside of that veil, because inside that veil is the ark. Now, here is the logistics. Aaron and his sons, who are going to be the priests of this covenant, shall tend it, that is the menorah, from evening to morning before he who is. We will discover later that they are to fill it and deal with any of the wicks, make sure that you got a brand new wick. They're going to do that every morning before they offer the incense of the morning. And then they will do it again in the mid-afternoon before they offer the afternoon incense and prayer. And so it will be the priests who are doing the incense offering, the prayer time, that will make sure that this lamp burns all 24 hours of a day. It shall be a statute forever to be observed throughout their generation by the people of Israel. So it's supposed to have the light of God burning 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, all year round. That's the representation, and I shared with you, I believe it is a symbol of the light of God's Word in our lives all week, all year. Chapter 28. We have a shift to the clothing that these priests are supposed to wear when they officiate. It's a special uniform, and it is very beautiful. Then bring near to you Aaron your brother and his sons with him from among the people of Israel to serve me as priests. Now there were probably already priests within the community of Israel during the time that they spent in Egypt. At the very beginning of time, probably the head of the household acted as the priest. But over time, it may have become the responsibility of one of the sons of the family. And so it was kind of family-oriented. This is now going to change for the nation of Israel. They're going to have an official priesthood for the entire nation. And that priesthood will be Aaron's family. His descendants will function as the priests. And then the relatives of Aaron and Moses and Miriam will later be tapped to function as the support personnel to the priests, the Levites, as we will refer to them. Now, back to the text. Gives the name Aaron, Aaron's sons, Nadab and Abihu. Those guys will be out of the picture before the tabernacle is fully functional. Eleazar and Ithamar. You shall make holy garments for Aaron your brother for glory and for beauty. So they are to set him aside as the priest of God, but also to be very beautiful. Verse 3, you shall speak to all the skillful, whom I have filled with a spirit of skill, and they may make Aaron's garments to consecrate him for my priesthood. We'll talk about the people who are involved in this design process eventually. These are the garments that they shall make. a breast piece, which is going to be like a little shield sort of thing over the heart, an ephod, which is just a simple over smock, a robe, which is the main garment, a coat of checkerwork, that's an over garment, turban, so a hat of some sort, and a sash, which would be like a big fabric belt. They shall make holy garments for Aaron your brother and his sons to serve me as priests. They shall receive gold, blue, purple, and scarlet yarns and fine twisted linen. So some of the same sort of fabric donations that were used to make the curtains and the veils of the temple will be utilized in making the uniforms of the priests. Now, the high priest uniform is going to be unique, and that's the one we will see described here. But the priest uniforms will also be something to set them apart from the common people that are coming to worship, so that you'll always know who the priests are when you come to the tabernacle. Verse 6, they shall make the ephod of gold, of blue, and purple, and scarlet yarns, and of fine twisted linen, skillfully worked. So this is the very simple smock that fits over the normal robe, and it becomes the base for the symbols of service that will mark the priesthood of Aaron and his descendants forever and ever. These symbols will show that a priest is representing the people to God and God to the people. But since we've run out of time, those descriptions will have to wait until the next time we are into the Word.